This is Teresa Caraggio with Third Paradigm, and I'm here talking with Scott James of Fairtrade Sports. And this is really exciting to be both on your home ground of Bainbridge Island and getting to finally meet you.
Yes, exciting for me as well. Welcome to Bainbridge.
Thank you. So tell our listeners, rather, about Fairtrade Sports.
Well, we've got an active blog at fairtradesports.com, and that tells a bit of our story. The short version is that we wanted to bring a fun, new, sexy product to the fair trade industry, to the fair trade movement and the green movement, both of which I'm passionate about. I also happen to be a soccer player. So Fairtrade Sports brings the world's first line of sports balls for soccer and football and basketball and many others that are both eco-certified and fair trade certified. Eco-certified meaning that 70% of any sports ball, any soccer ball that you and I have ever picked up or our kids, is 70% of that ball by weight is rubber. So we have our rubber tree forests in Indonesia and, south of India and in Sri Lanka that are FSC certified, Forest Stewardship Council certified. So they're sustainably run forests. And underneath the canopy of rubber trees grows tea bushes, which are actually fair trade certified tea bushes. So The tea that you and I drink and we have in our pantries is actually related to the soccer ball that you can now buy and have waiting in the garage. The fair trade certification related to sports balls is related to really taking the fight against child labor in this industry, which has been rampant for decades, taking that fight one step further. So it's not enough just to kick the children out of the stitching centers, but then continue paying their adult parents a slave wage. What we do, what the fair trade certification system does, is pays those adult parents a living wage, so that they don't have to then turn and ask their children or force their children to go to work elsewhere. So by taking the third-party fair trade certification system and marrying it to the anti-child labor system or that movement, now you actually have a lasting solution.
And can you tell listeners a little bit about the typical situation with soccer balls?
Yeah, a soccer ball has, when you pick up any soccer ball, it's got about 650 stitches in it. And, I'm a lifelong soccer player, but it wasn't until I was age 35 or so that I actually thought, how did those 650 stitches get in that ball? Majority of the time for high-end, mid to high-end soccer balls, they were put in there by hand. And typically, in the past, those have been put in there by children. 80% plus of all sports balls in the world come out of one town in Pakistan called Sialkot, which is amazing to think about. It's not a small town. It's about 3 million people.
That was shocking to me when I found that out.
But if you can just imagine, it's business park after business park after business park just producing soccer balls and volleyballs and rugby balls. It's amazing. And historically, Sialkot has been the sports ball capital of the world for several decades. But that's where the child labor problem is so rampant. A lot of good has been done to fight against that, but it's really not enough until we pay those parents a certified living wage.
Right. And you're also active in the Not For Sale campaign against global slave trafficking?
That's right. If you go to notforsalecampaign.org, you can learn more about that. There's an active blog there. It was started by a buddy of mine named David Badstone, who's plays many things. His day job is as a professor of ethics down at University of San Francisco. But at one point, about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, the local restaurant where he and his wife, it was one of their favorite restaurants, they were eating there, it was something like they were eating there on a Sunday night, and then Monday morning there was a bust. And it turned out that most of the kitchen staff was there under duress. They were slaves. They were being kept under lock and key to work in that kitchen. And it blew Dave's mind. And it got him all passionate. And when he does that, he goes and he writes a book. This is what the guy does. He's a good writer. It's very enjoyable to read.
Yeah, I've read it. It's really good.
Yeah. So he went undercover for like a year and wrote the book called Not For Sale, thus the Not For Sale campaign. And the campaign now has lots of different programs and ways for people to plug in, whether mm-hmm. whether you're a business person or a musician or a student or a stay-at-home parent. There's lots of different ways to plug in.
We have a local giving circle called Dining for Women, which is national, but the local chapters will have a potluck, mm-hmm. and then women will donate whatever they would have spent on dinner out to a global cause.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah. So last month, our cause was something called Love 146, which is it builds shelters for girls who have been kidnapped into the sex trade.
Yeah, and they've escaped, and
right,
and now they're
or they help them.
Yeah,
and they also help families buy children out of bonded labor and out of the sex trade.
Yeah,
and so they have something in the Philippines that they've built, this round house that's completely circular, and the money that's raised by the national group will be able to keep it operating.
Oh, that's cool.
A year. Yeah, yeah. And they show, it's a good organization because they also show videos on it. And so the guy was saying that the reason that he called it Love 146 is that he went to investigate. And so, you know, he's going and looking at these girls and standing shoulder to shoulder with the people who, you know, the men that he's disgusted by.
Yeah.
And he said it was one of the most disturbing experiences of his life to be in that situation, pretending to be that. And then looking at the girls who were watching cartoons, and they're all kind of glazed and zoned out, except for one little girl who's about 8 years old, who's just looking defiantly, you know, through the one-way glass, and that they don't even have names. They're not even left with the dignity of a name, but her number was 146. So he
That's
named
powerful.
It, yeah, yeah,
for very powerful.
That she's always been in his mind as what he's doing it for.
Yeah, we've got, there's similar powerful footage that we have in a documentary called the Not For Sale documentary, and really disturbing images. But if there's anything that would motivate you to, doesn't matter how busy you are in life, but to stop and to fight against this garbage,
and
using whatever skill set you have, and whatever time and talents or treasure that you've got, you know, repositioning this to fight against child labor and human trafficking and modern day slavery.
Yeah,
it's documentaries like that, like the Not For Sale documentary, do that. Those images will inspire you to fight against it.
I also had talked at the meeting about a couple of books. One is called Stolen Childhoods, and it's a photography book, which is a doctor who went around to different countries, and it's written even for a fifth grade level. My fifth grader did a report on it this past year. And then another one is called Sold.
Mm-hmm.
And that one's written more for a teenage level, but it's really well done, where it takes it in short chapters that make it a little more palatable and follow the path of a girl who is kidnapped into the sex slave trade.
Yeah, I think creating tools like that for our youth, where it's clearly age appropriate, you know, for elementary or junior or senior high, but it is an effective communication tool for our students, is so important. We just finished that for Fair Trade Sports, built a Fair Trade curriculum that has modules for elementary age and middle school and high school, using a soccer ball as the tangible teaching point that the teacher in the classroom gets to hold up and talk about as this tangible teaching point to talk about the fight against child labor, the work you can do to green certain aspects of products, and I think the turning around and teaching our youth is so incredibly important, because it makes this a truly an intergenerational movement.
Right, and I've always been interested in doing that with chocolate.
Yeah,
and that's how we first met. I think one of my daughters had written an essay.
For a cocoa contest, a trade cocoa contest.
Yeah, and then won the soccer ball.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think we did that one with our friends over at Divine Chocolate.
So I think it would be really key to to kind of model these things and be able to show how they work and how it goes through the distributors. And, you know, whether if you don't know, does that really change anything? You know,
right.
If you don't know whether you're buying cocoa beans that have been harvested by a child.
Yeah.
Does that doesn't change their reality. Does it make you innocent?
Right. Yeah. Where does the responsibility of that supply chain, where does it end up?
Exactly.
And because we've got more and more tools available to us as citizens, not us as consumers, but us as citizens first, we have the responsibility and we have the ability and the tool set to go and look at these supply chains of mm-hmm. the companies whose products and service we buy.
But your company not only sources everything fair trade, pays the fair trade premium and the living wage, and but you also give money to global charities. Is that right?
That's right. If mimicry is a form of flattery, then the Newman family can consider themselves flattered, because we set up Fair Trade Sports to be an exact duplicate of what mm-hmm. Newman's Own has accomplished with salad dressing and popcorn and foodstuffs mm-hmm. and now beverages. It's an S corporation that passes through all after-tax profits to the owners, who then pass through 100% to children's charities. And there's been lots of hybrid business models, you know, nonprofits owning for-profits and vice versa. And we took a look at it, and we couldn't find a single one that was actually producing significant amounts of charitable dollars, except mm-hmm. for one glaring exception, and that was Newman's Own.
Yeah,
and you know they stumbled upon it back in the early 80s.
Yeah,
very simple setup, but that actually works. And you can look at those inspiring starbursts that show up on the package, and it you know went from 50 million to 100 million. Now they're like 300 million.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy large numbers. Very exciting. So we split. Fairtrade Sports designates all after-tax profits to children's charities. Kind of completing that holistic cycle of fighting child labor at the beginning of the process by paying the parents a certified fair trade wage, and then at the end of the process, reinvesting in youth. Our two current children's charities are Boys and Girls Club of America and Room to Read. And until we hit profitability, which should probably be within 9 to 12 months, depending on how our winter gift-giving season sells through, we donate $1,000 each year mm-hmm. to each of those. So the company's coming up on our third birthday this fall. I hope by the time that we hit our fourth birthday, we're passing through after-tax profits. And then by the time we hit our fifth birthday, we've eclipsed that initial $1,000 a year per charity.
Yeah.
And that we've completely dwarfed that.
Well, I'm really hopeful that Paul Newman is going to be seen forever as the father of the next generation. Because for me, too, he was the inspiration.
Yeah.
He was the one where when people said, oh, you're never going to be able to do that. You know, I'd talk about my ideas and they'd say, oh, that'll never work.
Yeah.
And I'd be able to point to Paul Newman. And then at that point, they would say, oh, yeah, but that's Paul Newman.
Yeah.
So you're going to be the one that I can point to say, you don't have to be Paul Newman
That's
to make
right.
this model work.
Yeah, you don't need to be as good-looking and famous as Paul Newman. Yeah. Well, although, you know, I mean, it was him and a core group of friends. Yeah, he had his celebrity and, you know, a terrific actor to build upon that popularity. But look at the success of his daughter, Nell.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It shows that generationally you can pass something like that business model down
mm-hmm.
within a family. And, you know, Nell's an outstanding leader, you know, an over-the-top outstanding leader of that company that, frankly, you know, if anybody else had probably tried to take over the reins of that company, I don't think we would be seeing the success that they're having now.
Right. And should I ever get a chance to talk to Nell, what I want to know is how her mother did it. As a parent, I just want to know how you raise somebody who's so grounded.
Yeah.
I mean, she's at the farmers markets all the time. She fishes.
Yeah.
She just is a very down-to-earth, hard-working person.
Yeah. She's definitely the opposite of that Hollywood,
right?
You know, La La Land
yeah.
scene down in Southern California.
If you can do that in Hollywood,
yeah.
I think you and I have a shot at it for our kids.
Yeah. Well, I think probably what helped is they got out of Hollywood.
Right.
What I understand, that family didn't spend a whole lot of time there.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with our retailers that we have in Hollywood and our celebrity customers that we have there. You guys are still lovely. I love you.
Well, I'm going to need to close, but thank you so much, Scott.
Absolutely.
And I look forward to continuing to work together for a long, long time.
Yeah, I hope you enjoy your time here in the Pacific Northwest.
Thanks very much.